Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, winner of the 1999 Sundance You Be the Movie Reviewer contest.
Ooh, and I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio. I don't have nearly those credentials.
But we are in great presence of them, yes. Welcome to Movies 101, the show that is a big fan of the past. And by that, I mean we, like most true movie fans, aren't tied to the latest release calendar to satisfy our respective movie needs. On occasion, we're drawn to the past. I, for example, like classic westerns. MP is a big fan of what she calls murder shows. And Nathan, well, he'll watch pretty much anything, though he prefers films from the 1970s and, as he says, always a good thriller. Our individual tastes all seem to collide when Nathan pointed out that August 6th marked the 25th anniversary of the release of the movie The Sixth Sense, the 1999 film that made M. Night Shyamalan famous. We began thinking of just how many great films were released that year, and we realized that a look back was in order. So that's what this next 20-odd minutes will be, each of us discussing the decade in general while mentioning our favorite release and then some sort of hidden gem that we suggest you might want to check out. Let me begin by citing a few facts about the year, the one that closed out the last decade of the 20th century. Let's talk about the Academy Awards. American Beauty won 5 awards, including Best Picture. Best Actor, Kevin Spacey. Best Actress, Hilary Swank for Boys Don't Cry. Cider House Rules, Michael Caine. And then let's just look at, if you go on Rotten Tomatoes, what were the top 10 there? Toy Story 2, All About My Mother. We'll skip to number 4. The Iron Giant, The Insider, Not One Less, Being John Malkovich, Three Kings, The Straight Story, American Movie. And it goes on and on and on. There are so many good movies.
Well, and we haven't even gotten into some of the more popular films. I mean, you named a couple of them, but, you know, I'm just thinking about films that have lasted that are still being screened. Office Space is one.
Yep.
Fight Club is another. The Matrix, The Mummy. These movies that have just become both kind of cult classics, but also popular favorites.
Right.
I was also inspired by The Garland is doing a 1999 series where they're showing films. And 1999 has sort of become, in the last decade, sort of a go-to when someone says, what's the best year for film? 99 is often trumpeted as one of the best.
Well, and how did Galaxy Quest not come up out of Dan's mouth?
That's true.
Well,
we talk about Galaxy Quest a lot.
Exactly. That's right. Well, so we're trying to talk about
movies that
are both our favorites, but also movies that other people might not talk about.
Well, and then there were provocative movies such as Eyes Wide Shut, like Go
Stanley
Figure.
Stanley Kubrick's last
film. I mean, really,
film.
When you look at this list of films, I was kind of blown away. Mm-hmm. I mean, from Run Lola Run to smaller films, Notting Hill. I mean, it's really all across genres. Different directors, A-list actors, and just great stories.
And even blockbuster films that have provocative ideas behind them, that have a genuine vision and scope and sense of style.
The Virgin Suicides.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. I almost picked that one, but
Think of the filmmakers. Kubrick had Eyes Wide Shut, Shyamalan The Sixth Sense, David Lynch, The Straight Story, Scorsese, Bringing Out the Dead, John Stales, Limbo, Mike Leigh, Topsy Turvy, Cronenberg, Existenz, Milos Forman, Paul Thomas Anderson with Magnolia, Spike Lee, Summer of Sam, one of my favorites of his film, you know, along with people like Kimberly Pierce with Boys Don't Cry, or Sofia Coppola, The Virgin Suicides.
Tom Tickfer.
Yes.
Run, Lola, Run.
Yes, Run, Lola, oh. Yeah, Run, Lola, Run.
Well, and I was trying to think, this is one of those situations where you always look back and think, man, we didn't know how good we had it, because I don't think that any of the recent years of cinema will be talking about in quite the same way as 1999. I was trying to figure out why 99 was a year of such riches. And I think it's just a combination of Hollywood really amping up productions and having bigger budgets and better special effects. But I also think it was kind of a runoff from the mid-90s, where you started to see American independent films become genuine blockbusters, something like Pulp Fiction, or even a movie like Forrest Gump, one of the highest grossing films of 1994, another great year in film. And you think, I mean, that was a popular hit, but it's also a really strange movie, an auteur-driven film. And so it was almost like Hollywood was willing to take more chances because they'd seen it
and
work.
And also look at serious topics. I mean, look at The Green Mile, for example, from 1999, or one incarnation of the talented Mr. Ripley. And I think that, you know, if you look at some of these films in terms of, you know, I'm thinking of Election. I mean, there were some new things, like you're pointing out, that were happening.
Yeah.
And that is really pretty notable in the whole film overview.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, obviously, it is way before streaming services began.
Yep. So we saw these movies in the theater.
In the theater, exactly.
For the most part.
So,
sometimes,
you know,
on DVD.
It was like
but...
one of the last big times before everybody was going to start staying home and watching YouTube or Netflix or whatever.
And it's
whatever.
Right before Netflix became a household name with their DVD service. So it's like right before that happened.
So what we wanted to do here is basically each of us pick a movie that was our favorite from that year and then maybe point towards some films that we like to call hidden gems, which are films that you may not know about or you may not have seen that you probably should check out. So I'm going to jump in here and I'm going to say my favorite was Toy Story 2. And that, you know, you could pick any of the Toy Story films and they'd all be great films, great entertainment. But the thing that I loved about Toy Story 2 is it introduced the character of Jessie and her story based on the song that Sarah McLachlan sang, When She Loved Me. That is the essence of that whole series about dolls being so much a part of a child's life and then getting dumped as they grow into adolescence.
Well, I still have mine.
You do. You do. And they scare the hell out of everybody who comes to our house because they're all like Chucky dolls.
They are not.
They're not getting a Toy Story movie made about the
right.
I have a Jessie doll.
I think this is a great pick. And I think the thing about the Toy Story franchise, because I know we're getting a fifth one pretty soon, is that I think the franchise is so solid that Toy Story 2, as great as it is, might be my third favorite Toy Story movie. Like, that's how good at least the first three entries in the series are. I mean, I think this was also kind of the moment when people started to realize that, oh, this Pixar studio is producing more than just popular family films. And also when you realize that, oh, a sequel to a popular family film could be so rich and have so much style and intelligence behind it. And that became kind of their brand for the next decade and a half.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Toy Story 2 fan.
Yeah.
And so my film, this might surprise each of you, because you would think of this list of great films, this would not have been my pick. But I chose The Blair Witch Project.
I've heard of this one.
Of the reasons why I chose it is because you've dragged me to see all these horrible horror films as of late. And I think this movie just capsulizes what you can do if you don't try too hard. And they had a great marketing campaign behind them. But I remember when Dan and I happened to attend the 1999 Sundance Film Festival, and this premiered there.
This was the cause célèbre of the 1999.
It was. And it was Sundance, at a midnight showing, so we didn't get to go see it. And we were a little disappointed about that. But, you know, I had my film critic duties to perform. But so it had all this buzz. And it's the story, if people are not familiar with it, I trust many people will be, of these little college filmmakers who decide to make a film about a witch or a creature that lives in the woods. It's
some mysterious presence.
A child. Yes.
Human being, not one of those arachnoid creatures from outer space. And they go into the woods to try to find this person. And all we know about their adventures is this camera that was left behind. They've disappeared now. And as a matter of fact, as part of the marketing campaign, they announced that the actors in this film were actually deceased.
Yeah.
Right, and had not been found or whatever. But it's so scary.
It kind
scary.
Of began the whole found footage.
Yep.
Right.
And viral internet marketing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so scary. I mean, we saw
it.
We got into the first row of a showing in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when it was released on like July 14th.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, whoa.
Yes, we were.
Yeah, I think Blair Witch is really scary too. I don't think it's lost any of its power. That moment when they go down into the basement of that house at the end.
Oh,
chilling.
Man, yeah.
Well, now it's my turn, and I didn't have to think very hard. My favorite movie from 1999, Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia. This is one of my favorite movies of all time.
This just goes to show you, all three of these could be on our list because that is one of the great films.
I agree.
Well, and it was his third feature. He'd just been nominated for the screenplay for Boogie Nights, and so he was kind of given this blank check, and he delivered this big, shaggy, ambitious, overlong character mosaic about bizarre. This one day in Los Angeles.
Reign of Frogs.
Well, I didn't want to give that away in case you haven't seen
Tom
it.
Tom Cruise was amazing.
Well, and it's got this huge cast. I mean, you had Philip Seymour Hoffman and Philip Baker Hall and Julianne Moore and John C. Reilly is so good. William H. Macy. Jason Robards in his final performance and Tom Cruise in, I think, his best performance.
Absolutely.
And I know this is a movie that is not beloved by all. It is divisive, not least of which is that it has a rain of frogs in it. Sorry, spoiler alert. But it's a 20-some-year-old movie. But I think this movie has such great vision and so much passion. And I don't think that Paul Thomas Anderson has made a movie quite like this since. And I know he was only 29 when he made it. And it, I think only a 29-year-old given a blank check could make a movie like
that. And I still see some of the images from that film in my head. And yeah. So that's, if it resonates that much for that long, a winner.
Anyway, I love it. Magnolia.
And that concludes the first half of this special episode of Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue discussing just how much good stuff came out in theaters during the year 1999. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed our respective opinions about the wealth of great cinema that the year 1999 had to offer. Let's continue. And I wanted to make the point that we'd all listed three of our favorite films from that year, but there are just too many to list. I mean, here are some of the ones that I've talked about over the years to death on this program. Run, Lola, Run. Being John Malkovich, Galaxy Quest, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, The Sixth Sense, The Blair Witch Project, and more. So settling for Toy Story 2.
That's not settling.
No, right. It isn't. So
do you have a gem for us?
Well, no. Let's let Nathan go with Hidden Gems.
Okay. So as I was thinking
How do you define it?
Well, so I was thinking about movies from 1999 that are maybe underseen or under-discussed or underloved, or movies that have kind of been forgotten, but movies that I think are special. And there were a few that I was considering. I was thinking of Steven Soderbergh's film The Limey with Terrence Stamp, which
yes.
I think is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier Mike Leigh's Topsy Turvy, which is about Gilbert and Sullivan creating the Mikado, and that's one of his very best movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anytime we do an overlooked gem show, Mike Leigh is bound to come up. And I almost picked one of my favorite 90s comedies, which came out in 99, which is Dick, starring Kirsten Dunst and
Michelle Williams
and Dan Hedaya as Richard Milhouse Nixon. And that is one of the funniest historical comedies. Will Ferrell and Bruce McCullough as Woodward and Bernstein, who just hate each other's guts. That's a really funny film. But the one that I went with, the unseen gem I went with, is a movie by another director that I'm pretty sure I have brought up on another Unseen Gem show, John Sayles, and it's his 1999 film, Limbo. And I think of this not only as an advertisement for Limbo, but just as an advertisement for Sayles' filmography. I think that because he hasn't been active in a long time and because he doesn't have a lot of big hits to his name, if any big hits to his name, he kind of gets forgotten. And I think he is one of the most important voices in American independent film, especially in the second half of the 20th century.
I agree.
He's so important to that particular subgenre. And this movie, it's set in rural Alaska, and it stars David Strathairn, who's in, I think, every John Sayles movie.
Yep.
And he plays this local handyman who kind of has a shady past, and he begins a relationship with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, who plays this burnt out lounge singer who's moved to town with her teenage daughter. And it begins as this kind of believable character study about these people in this specific town. And because it's a John Sayles film, it's also about social and economic class. It's about institutional racism. It's about these corporate interests that are encroaching on these independent business practices in the area. And then there's a crime committed, and our three central characters flee into the wilderness to escape Strathairn's past. And I won't give anything away except to say that this movie, Limbo, has one of the boldest endings I've ever seen. You could also call it one of the most infuriating
endings. It was infuriating to me, yes.
But here's the thing. I think that it's what the movie is about. It's right there in the title. What is going to happen at the end of this film? And the first time I saw Limbo, when it ends the way that it does, I thought, perfect. I just couldn't believe that he chose to end that movie that way. And I'm sure it inspired groans and people throwing their popcorn at the screen, but not me. I applaud John Sayles. Yeah. And I'm telling you, if you're not familiar with his work, pick any movie, especially from the 80s and 90s by John Sayles, you will see a great film.
I would say if you're going to begin your introduction to John Sayles, go back to 1987, Mate One with David Strathairn, and it really introduced Chris Cooper. Such a wonderful movie.
I would also say Lone Star is a great entry point. That's probably his most well-known film.
Yes.
And I also really like Eight Men Out, the baseball film.
Well, I'll go next, and we'll let Mary Pat follow up with hers. There's so many good films, but I went with a little film directed by Doug Liman, and the movie's called Go. And does it deserve to be ranked among the top 20? Maybe not, but it is an interesting film. And first of all, Liman was coming off Swingers, which was a wonderful film with John Favreau and Vince Vaughn. Yeah, and then this was before he inaugurated the Bourne franchise. So that's what he's been known for. But here are some of the stars. Sarah Polley, Jay Moore, Scott Wolfe, Taye Diggs, Katie Holmes, Timothy Olyphant, William Fichtner. All these people went on to greater things. Scott Wolfe was, of course, in Party of Five. Katie Holmes, I love her in Pieces of April, but probably best known for marrying Tom Cruise.
Or Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek, right? Timothy Olyphant was in both Deadwood and Justified. And the most recent Tarantino film.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
The great thing about this film, it's a drug deal gone bad and running around. It's just a film that doesn't get talked about, even in talking about Liman's best movies. But you should go see it.
Dan, you will be happy to know that in a certain subset of like younger Gen X, older millennial people, Go is not an unseen gem.
Okay.
So you'll be happy to know that there are, because this was a video store staple. This was a movie that was always on the shelf at Blockbuster and had like a really eye-catching cover with Sarah Polley on it.
Blockbuster, what is that?
I'll tell you about it later. I'm off air. And it was on cable a lot, and it's kind of one of those post-Pulp Fiction Tarantino knockoffs a little bit with all the different plot lines that converge and the comic violence. But I would agree with you. I think Go holds up really well. It's one of the best of those post-Tarantino films. I like that pick.
Okay, MP, your turn.
Okay, well, of course, you know, I have difficulty following the assignment, so I kind of took it in a different direction. So it was
supposed
to be.
How did you ever get through law school?
I don't know. It was Hidden Gems. So I picked some gems that were so hidden, even I have not seen them.
Okay.
But I have a specific reason for choosing each of them. So the first one is The Wind Will Carry Us. So keep in mind, this is all hearsay I'm relying on. But that's Abbas Kiarostami's, one of his films about this Kurdish mountainside village where nothing happens and everything happens. And I think that it brings out all of the tensions that we might be familiar with what's happening in the region. Also, he apparently films these interactions among the villagers and so forth. Why did I pick this film? Because I picked this filmmaker in many respects because, one, he actually wrote one of my favorite movies of all time, The White Balloon. He's also maybe one of the initial creators of the Iranian New Wave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when he died a few years ago, I mean, we had Asghar Farhadi and Jafar Panahi spoke about his influence on them. And so The Wind Will Carry Us, and it is available on streaming. The second one that I chose is a little bit more obscure. So shout out to anyone who's able to locate a copy of this, maybe on eBay DVD or something. This is a film called Cloud Clouds of May by Nuri Bilge Ceylan. Again, another Turkish director, writer, who also does some of his own camera work. I think that this is, you know, again, a story about a film director who goes and wants to make a movie starring members of his own family. So why did I choose this particular film? We're starting to see a regional thing here, because he also directed Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, which is one of my favorite movies of all times as well. And the final one I chose, probably not quite so obscure, is the film by the Dardenne brothers, Rosetta. And so they're probably most well known for La Enfant. And this film is about a young woman who's trying to find a job. She's trying to escape from her unfortunate home situation and so forth. But the Dardenne brothers, I think, have really done some amazing things. They really seem to have the ability to capture real life, but then give it sort of another twist, which I appreciate. And I know you're a fan.
Oh, yeah. I love the Dardenne brothers. I'm not sure if I've seen this specific film, Rosetta. I have not seen the other two. And Abbas Kiarostami, I mean, I've seen a couple of his more well-known films like Close Up and Certified Copy, which is one of my favorite movies mm-hmm. of the last 10, 15
yeah,
years.
Yeah, he turned to Juliette Binoche in his later filming career.
Such a good movie. But I'll have to check that one out because there's definitely some blind spots there. And I also have to appreciate you pulling us out of just the American
right.
and British film kind of tunnel vision mm-hmm. that we sometimes have because, you know, and also a lot of these movies pre-streaming, whether or not they would actually come to your local theater was always a big question.
Especially
mark,
in Spokane.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you never knew it. You'd read about these movies coming out of festivals and like the big city critics would be hailing
and
them.
And we'd have to haunt
and then where
the,
did they go? You know?
Haunt the foreign film section of the yes. local well, video stores.
And how many times did we drive 5 hours over to see a movie in Seattle?
Or Vancouver, you know, or something.
Yeah, wherever.
Yeah.
So that is
maybe
one,
that's just us.
Well,
but.
I mean, I've done the uh-huh. same thing. But I think that is one of the nice things about, you know, streaming is, I mean, there's lots of downsides too, but at least it brought us some of these movies. And hopefully Clouds of May will pop up on some streaming service someday, because I'd like to see that. That sounds, mm-hmm. and it sounds very much in keeping with Kiarostami's blend of documentary and narrative. It sounds really interesting.
And that ends this special episode of Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and on this week's show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Patruthart, and I discussed just how great the year 1999 was for film. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late, great, and recently passed Jenna Rollins. People in independent film have a passion. They're not in it for the money. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.